I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him. I found my mind.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. SP Futures down 675. NASDAQ Futures down 1875. This kind of continues the turnaround we had yesterday afternoon when we had the... We're stepping up some issues with China over Hong Kong, and that's sort of what was coincidental. We also had the ludicrous news conference of the president and Barr standing there trying to sign this new bill, trying to spank Twitter for saying that he lies once in a while. Just whatever. Anyway, Kevin, with us?
Define with.
You're here, man. I'm just reading an article here. Boy, some of the stuff I read, Kevin, it's just. It solidifies the view I have, honestly, that and if there is such a thing as a theme for this show, is that everything depends on everything else. And my aggravation with some of the new politicians, and certainly with some of the new fascist left that we're seeing, is that they don't seem to get that. And maybe they're just young. I don't know, but. I'm reading this article here regarding the, what do they call them? The remittance flows. You know what a remittance flow is?
No. What is a remittance flow?
A remittance flow, and don't feel like a dum-dum because I just learned it myself. That's the name they use for the money that people send essentially back home. Like people here from Mexico send money to Mexico.
Oh, okay. So that's a remittance flow, eh?
Yeah, and...
Evidently, I thought it was just money they sent back home.
Right, well, evidently, me too. Evidently, there's a big population, mostly in Europe, people from sub-Saharan Africa that send money back to the area, because obviously the area is in bad shape. So the remittance flows are projected to drop by 23% this year from last year, which is kind of a lot. And because of... shutdowns allegedly for the virus. Now, when I say allegedly, there's a lot of stuff happening for the virus that has nothing to do with the virus. And that's my serious bitch about this whole mess, is that people use every crisis to do what they wanted to do anyway. And the rest of us have to be very vigilant that doesn't happen, and I don't see the vigilance, which aggravates me by the day. Because I think there's two kinds of people. My joke of three kinds of people in the world, Kevin, I won't say that. But I think there's two kinds of people that live in this country. I don't say kinds of people, but kinds of points of view. And one is people think freedom is something a benevolent government gives people. And the other, I think, a lot smarter people realize that freedom is something that's taken from government. And we're seeing an awful lot of people in category one here that I never thought were. Oh, come on. When this is all over, don't worry. Everything will be okay. They'll give us those rights back. No, they won't. Not unless you tell them you want them back. And you better make sure you mean it. Am I that wrong there? Anyway, but because of all these places along the way closing, the average charge now to send $200 to sub-Saharan Africa is up to like 9%. Because of people allegedly shorter hours. Whatever kind of BS you can come up with. Even something like that has taken a hit. mean, everything that happens just happens. The ramifications stretch everywhere. You know, and it's the more you read, the more you realize. Even I, who have that point of view on life, don't have a clue as to how widespread things even are. And I'm the guy who's always bitching at other people about they're not thinking widely enough. And all the time, I'm not thinking widely enough. There's no way anybody could think widely enough. It's just true. Whenever something like this happens, ramifications are everywhere. Just saying.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, you just start thinking about, you know, as businesses try to come back, just consider the notion that, some things are open and their suppliers are still closed.
Right.
You know, how does that work?
Well, and you have people that feel that freedom is a compromise. That somebody in government somewhere, and I know I'm beating up on somebody here that a lot of people don't even know on the show, but this current Chicago mayor is absolutely the worst example of what I'm talking about. She's convinced that you do whatever you want to do, that you take a dump, basically, because of her benevolence. I mean, that's what her attitude appears to be. Now, that's the way she's coming across this. Now, it could very well that the press or whatever, that she's not coming across the way she really feels, but the fact is, that's how she's coming across. I mean, the simple stuff now, my brother's all pissed off last night. They canceled the softball leagues this summer. Now, why is that, Kevin? Well, because even though we just heard the parks are reopening, well, they're reopening, but you can't just reopen. They're only reopened to 5. They got to close at 5:00. Now, somebody somewhere.
Why does the virus spread after 5 o'clock more than it does during the day?
As two Notre Dame graduates, his first question is, "What happens at 4:59? It can't happen at 5:01, or the other way around." I mean, the two guys have the exact same comment. But you can't just say we're going to open up a bar. Oh no, you can't just open up a bar. You got to have people sitting there, whatever. Because somebody has to put this caveat on freedom. Well, you can have a date with your girlfriend on Saturday night. No, you got to be home by 11. Now, wait a minute, I'm 28. I'm 40 years old. I can be home whenever I damn well please. Oh, no. You got to be home by 11. Who says that? The mayor. She'll allow you to go on a date, but I mean, this freedom is not a compromise, Kevin. Freedom is you get to do what you want unless you're going to hurt somebody else, like traffic or something else. Now, you can make the case here that in the virus, you probably can't, if you have a disease, you probably shouldn't be walking into nursing homes and doing stuff. However, I'm going to say, Kevin, that the average person that goes in a nursing home only lasts, a year and a half, something like that? It's not very long.
Yeah, I don't know what the number is, but you're right. You go in the nursing home because you're trending towards end of life. Now, there are senior centers that are not the same as nursing homes.
Right.
People may live there for a much longer period of time. But go on.
Well, my point is that staying in your own room for like a year without seeing any family or anything else, God's sake, Kevin, that's a
it'll kill you.
That's a massive thing. And you know what? I'm gonna say this for somebody whose stepfather was he was an odd guy, but he was in several nursing homes.
Your stepfather, good guy though.
Yeah, he's good. Oh yeah, honest. The day is long, and you know, that was without generous to a fault.
And he used to put up with us after Sunday doubleheader basketball.
Oh yeah, he loved that
Sunday doubleheader.
But
so anybody who put up with all of us every week had to be okay.
To show you how things were when people were young, we used to play two, maybe three games of basketball. We started softball. If we got rained out, just in the heat on a Sunday, we'd come back to my place, get about 4 cases of beer, and play basketball after that. I don't think that's happening today, Kevin. Just saying. But here you have, I get this stuff from my alderman yesterday, who I'm ready to, you know, whatever. Let's see. Education and child care services. Health screenings for all before entering. Every person must wear face coverings at all times, even though people don't even think that helps a lot of ways. Children must be in groups of 10 or less with permanent staff members. Minimize social interactions among children. Isn't that why they're supposed to be there? All meals individually packed and served in one room. Children must regularly wash their hands. if possible, introduce staggered drop-off and pick-up. Can't we just say we're open and allow adults, parents, and people that run the place, knowing what the dangers are, to set things up that works for themselves? Do we have to have everybody? Restaurants, coffee shops, can't just open them. Contactless pickup must be available and contactless payment encouraged. Now, we're not, no cash, obviously. Outdoor
dining. And I've been noticing the word contactless a lot, and I don't think it's a word.
No, I don't think it is either. Outdoor dining is permitted, and social distancing measures must be maintained, no more than six per table. So if you got a table as big as downtown Chicago, you still only have to have six, right? All tables 6 feet apart. Remove or block tables if they can't be moved. Barriers to be used where 6 feet social distancing is not possible. So if you got a hallway to the bathroom, you have to seal it off so you can't use the bathroom. Let's see you enforce it.
You know, yeah. I mean, that ultimately that becomes the issue. Show me. Let's see how you enforce that stuff.
Well, you know,
but you know what? There's a whole mindset with this. I saw a Chuck Schumer quote the other day, and he said, you know, this can't be left to the private sector, and this can't be left to individuals. This requires government to make this happen. And that's, so, you know, that's the big mindset that's involved here. And there's not only politicians who believe that, but there are individual people, too many individual people who believe that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the same thing I just said. You know, this is even better. Retail and personal services. Limit customer capacity to 25%. In other words, limit yourself from making any profit whatsoever. No services that require removal of face coverings, e.g. facials, shaves. Okay. 6 feet indicators must be placed throughout the store. And at 6 feet, we all realize, of course, is a made-up number. The real number was 3 feet from the Harvard study of 100 years ago. Employees must disinfect the store as frequently as possible. Customers and employees are required to wear facial coverings at all times. Sanitize handled products after each customer, and no product samples, testers. You can't have a sample anymore. If practical, implement an appointment-only model. Kevin, these people who write this stuff, they will never, from my experience at security, in the CBOE, they will never, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there were 7 things here about retail and personal services. I guarantee you, in our lifetime, all 7 will not be removed. We'll, 2 months from now, we'll say things are going okay. Let's get rid of the appointment-only model. They'll tick off one of them. A year from now, we'll tick off 2 of them. Maybe the only way we'll tick off all of them is to get Lori the hell out of office. And even then, probably won't.
No, you won't. It won't.
Won't.
No, that's been a concern. I know we've discussed it on the show before. We'll go back to something, but something isn't going to be what the status quo ante was.
Because we have to negotiate it. And you know what? I've got people absolutely convinced that every time they go out now, everybody else should have a face covering, because even if it's 10 years from now and somebody has a cold, they don't want to catch a cold from that person.
Yeah, who was it that said we'll never shake hands again?
No, yeah. So,
yeah, I say bullshit on baloney on that.
Yeah, that's all right. We're podcast. Even if we're radio,
yeah, that's true.
Even if we're radio, we're over before 7.
Yeah,
so we're okay.
But not a habit I want for broadcast purposes.
No. So what does this all mean for? Well, so can you? You can't tell me this isn't a war on other people when you cancel like all parks in the city after 5 o'clock. Most regular people, unlike the people from the city that found a way to stay home and still get paid during this thing, other people work. So most people don't have the opportunity to use a park before 5 o'clock. I'm just saying, I've used the park my whole life. Usually the softball starts 6:30 or 7 because people work during the day. So now you're going to essentially say the parks are not available for people who work. No basketball, no softball, no nothing. I mean, is this who's making this stuff up? These are,
have they taken down the hoops so that people can't play basketball?
Well, they did that in most places already.
You know,
yeah,
you can't guard anybody from 6 feet.
You know what? The NBA should be fine.
Actually, it'd be kind of perfect for you, though, Tom.
Yeah, that's right. that would be our friend Slim. You know, anyway.
Yeah, that'd be our guy Mike. Yeah. hey, just keeping social distance. Yeah. It's the new freelance.
I don't. Who's going to have to get us back? Is there any such thing? I don't think a lot of people want to get back to normal. But I really am frosted today about this lady. I don't know if I mentioned to you, Antonio, but Stewie's mom died. And if I mentioned it,
oh yeah, you talked about it yesterday a little bit.
Yeah,
go on.
The fact that there's no funeral today, I'm just beside myself. I can't even. 96-year-old lady has at least one daughter, maybe two that are nuns. We can't even. What did John Wayne say in the movie when the guy got killed? And he was a total bleep. And John Wayne said, "I don't care who he is. Everybody gets to be read over." You know, when you die. This, for God's sake, even in the Iliad, when Achilles, the idiot, dragged Hector's body around the place and desecrated it, still gave the body back to the old man when the old man said, "We get to bury our dead." This is 5,000 years ago, and people had. Now, what do we do? I mean, Greg is telling me that his mom's in a nursing home and she's not doing great, so he goes to the funeral guy. 10 people max at a funeral. This is outside, Kevin. This is outside at a cemetery. 10 people max, and it includes the 4 people that are there from the nursing home, so 6. So if you have 7 kids, all your kids can't go to your funeral.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And why are we?
You know, I would just say we're going anyway. We're going anyway, and if they want to arrest us, you know, they're going to arrest us, and you know, film it.
Well, you know, it's funny. I had a brother, not a brother, but a brother is in a religious brother was a teacher at Marist, and there was a debate about some law that was coming in. It was one of those, and he was a big freedom guy, and the law was somebody said, well, it's not going to be enforced very well, so don't worry about it. And the response of Brother Copper, I remember his name, he goes, the promise of lack of enforcement is never a reason, is never an excuse for a law. To say that the law is so stupid, don't worry, it'll never be enforced, is really not a positive for a law, in his mind.
I agree.
And
No, I hear exactly what he's saying. I think that makes perfect sense. But on the other hand, following it when it's stupid is not necessary.
Well, I think that we need on all levels here to anybody who gets in office in any place. And Trump tried this. He started it before he went kind of off the rails. But I was hoping he would come through with it.
What was that day? I don't
think. Yeah, well, he's, I think
I vaguely remember that day, I think.
Yeah, you know, I think he's getting worse. But I mean, but his instincts regarding all these regulations and stuff. I was reading the stuff about the new proposed market system for trading stocks. God, Kevin, whoever designed it, I don't know. It's absolutely incredible. Why can't we just have all the stock trade in one place like we used to? Why the competition, however you define it, the competition can either be a bunch of people trying to bifurcate, however you want to do a market, and drag it all over the place. Or you can have a system where the buyers of stock pretty much trade with the sellers of stock, and the people in the industry only trade when somebody else isn't there. When I traded the OEX, which in one time I'm going to say was the best product ever for people for customers, something like 68 or 72% of all trades were customer to customer. And I'm going to say now in stock right now it's probably less than 10%. Because somebody gets ahead of every order and takes their little piece and then resell it so they can pay for the order flow. To where the retail people who, again, sometimes are clueless, because their commissions are so cheap, they don't understand why. They're convinced that because there's payment for order flow. And the reason why there's payment is because they don't trade with another person. Their fill's not as good as it normally would be. But they don't get that part. All they know is it's free or cheap. But I'm saying that the new stuff now is unbelievable. And whoever designed it, well, once you get away from a principle, like it ought to be an auction market where people buy an IBM, sell it, and people sell an IBM meet in the same place. Once you get away from that, you can't design you can't design a horse if they're all dead, right? I mean, it's like, you either have the buyers and sellers meet in a spot or you don't. And if you don't, you can sit there for years and try and put together a system that tries to mimic what the system ought to be. It just doesn't get there, does it?
Well, because it's not the same.
No,
You can put a saddle on it. It's still a camel.
Yeah. Well, that'd be interesting, a saddle up on top of that camel. Anywho. So we promised to talk about sports today. Where are we going with this? This is going to become a competition of of who's safe and who's less safe, or what are we doing?
Yeah, where did I hear? I don't know if it was you and Lou yesterday or what, but I think everybody, you know, there's a fear of being first. I think being first and being wrong. I think it's an undue fear. It's an overestimated fear, but it's there. And it's the worst thing in sports, right? Playing not to lose. The leagues are playing not to lose.
Well, let me back you up a little bit. The article, between you and some of the other listeners and Lou and everybody sent us stuff. I'm reading them all, but it's hard for me to keep track where the hell it came from. Anywho, the guy who's been dead for 13 years that I asked Maddie to get on as a guest, the doctor was writing up.
What did he say?
Nothing today. but he was talking about the swine flu vaccine back in the Jerry Ford era, and how they came out with this vaccine because they were absolutely convinced, or not convinced, that there was going to jump, but there was essentially the term swine flu. There was a flu running around in pigs or whatever that they thought if it ever jumped to humans would be incredibly devastating. So they designed a vaccine for it before it even made that jump. In fact, I think only two humans ever really had it. But they designed a vaccine. It didn't work. Well, who knows if it worked, because it never really jumped, but an amazing amount of people in the country were forced to get this vaccine. Everybody in the armed services, whatever. Anyway, he said, when you're doing something like this, he said, you know damn well that you're going to give this vaccine to 15 guys in an old people's home, nursing home, and somebody's going to have a heart attack the next day, and they're going to blame you. He goes, maybe if you got a really crummy vaccine, you might have contributed to it, but maybe not, but these are just circumstances that happen. I mean, when's the last time, Kevin, you know somebody, and usually somebody doesn't know much about cars, that has a, whatever their charging light is on, and they go in and they get a new generator or alternator, what they call them these days, and the next day something else breaks and they blame the mechanic. What did you do to my car? Without realizing that there's 10,000 pieces on a car and they fixed one of them the day before, type of thing.
Fixed one of them the day before, and by the way, you have 200,000 miles on your car.
Yeah, just by the way. So the guy says you're always running that risk, but he's also said, how do you? And if he was alive today, he would say, if the true number of this particular disease, if you look at people that have it, if the true number is 0.5, 0.6% of the people who get it die, which is pretty darn high compared to a flu, it's 5 to 6 times worse than a regular flu. He said, but to try and entice 300 million people to get a vaccine, to drop that number from 0.5 or 0.6 to 0.2 or 0.3, you're not going to drive it to zero. You want a vaccine, it's not going to be zero. So to cut that in half, if there's any whiff of any sort of a bad reaction to the vaccine, or if young people don't even think they need it, they say you're really lucky to have 20, 30 million people get this vaccination, not 330 million. Unless you put in some major law, in which case, then you have to indemnify, Merck, whoever comes out with it. And then if something bad happens, instead of people suing Merck, they're just dying. He says you're liable to make things, because a lot of vaccines have a death rate of 0.2-0.3%, or perceived death rate of people dying the next week, even though it might not have anything to do with it, because it's not at all.
You get shot after taking the vaccine. Do we count that as a vaccine death? That
would
be consistent.
We already have guys suing Tyson Foods. He died of the COVID and he worked at Tyson Foods. Well, nobody knows if he caught it at home or somewhere else. But I'm saying, to go with this idea that we have people that should know better, Fauci, Bill Gates, people that, and of course we get a bunch of stuff up. Bill Gates is part of the, we need a vaccine so we can make the money on it, whatever. But these people are all talking. Nobody has gone through the numbers like some of the stuff you and I have read. Okay, suppose it is 0.5. What are you going to gain with this vaccine? If it's a year from now, is there going to be a law that you, is this going to be added to all Lori's list of crap here? You can't go into a restaurant, you can't go into a bar until you say you took the vaccine? I mean, you know that's next.
We'll throw that into the list of great rock band names that that we've come up with on this show. Lori's List of Crap.
God. S&P Futures down 6. The NASDAQ Futures down 10. I'm Tom Howley's Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Jack Silverman on the board. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Jack Silverman on the board. Kevin O'Neill with us as he is every Friday morning. S&P Futures down 7.25. NASDAQ Futures down 12. Dow Futures down 7. We've been flipping around here. Kind of were flatlined a little while ago, but now we're dipping a little bit. Again, we got this alleged, even though it's not on his schedule officially, rumor all is that all over the place that Trump is having a U.S.-China press conference this morning. News conference, press conference, same thing. So guess what? Twitter just flagged another one of Trump's tweets in Minneapolis for glorifying violence. God, this is getting out of hand. Well, not getting out of hand. I think it's been out of hand. But DAX down 108. Now these guys have been up huge the last couple of days because the European Central Bank poured another $1 trillion into their system. So any kind of if we get a few days in a row without somebody pouring in a trillion, I guess we go down a little bit. Puts you down 59. It's a full 1%. CAC around down 32.7%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei, which has been up huge all week. It's only down 38 points, 0.2%. Shanghai is actually up 6, 0.2%. Hang Seng down 171.7%. They've been down most of the week, but again, not horrible. Over in bonds, 10-year yield 0.66. That's down almost 4 basis points. The Bund 0.44, negative. Japan negative 0.003. So they're right at zero, and they've been really unchanged at that number for quite a while. Oil down 91 cents, 32.80. Brent down 90 cents, 34.39. Natural gas up 2 cents, 185. RBOB 98 cents, which is down almost a penny. And we've got rallies in the gold and silver today. Gold up 13.70. Silver up 28 cents, which is a lot. Copper unchanged. Platinum up 560. Jack, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports, bud.
We're looking pretty good on the traffic standpoint this morning. No major traffic or accidents to report. We do, however, have an earlier accident on the Bishop Ford East before 159th Street, which is causing slight congestion. For weather, it is currently 59 degrees and cloudy with a high of 70 with some light showers throughout the area. In Phoenix, it is currently 81 degrees and clear with a high of 112. And this day in sports, in 1992, the Chicago White Sox go up north to visit the Toronto Blue Jays and lose 3-0 on only 4 hits. But the lone bright spots for the White Sox is Tim Raines gets on base twice and steals two stolen bases, including his 700th of his career, 808. Chief.
700 stolen bases. I don't know. In today's world, Kevin, are we ever going to see that again? Stolen base seems
probably
like
not, because no. The way the statistics look, you got to be at least 80% successful to make it worth your trouble.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know about that, but
well, that's what the numbers say. It all boils down to, you know, what are your probabilities. So, and it also, it depends on the number of outs and you know, all kinds of other factors as well. But when you start saying, you know, what is the value of being on second with nobody out versus being on first with nobody out, I think that's substantial. What is the value of being on third with, you know, with two outs, you know, versus being on second with two outs is not so substantial.
With you and I running, it's very substantial.
Well, that's true. Like, although, you know, there was a time, Tom, when I never stopped at one base. You know, I sort of understood the aging process by base running, you know, going from first to third on a single. You know, when I was young, always first to third on a single. Then eventually it started getting really close at third base. And then there comes the that time when you're halfway between second and third and saying, what in the hell was I thinking?
Yes.
And then finally the ultimate measure of being old is just stopping at second.
Late in his career, I loved him. Paul Konerko just gets all over one. He hits a dart into the corner. You know, it never went above, well, who knows, I'm going to say the thing never went above like 15 feet in the air. It was just a lash. Hits the wall. He put his head down. He went to first. He never even dreamed of going to second. The thought.
Yeah. Yes. I remember in 2005, the World Series year, and you may recall that Frank Thomas was, you know, he didn't play. His ankle was so messed up, and he had surgery, and he was in a cast. And I remember Reinsdorf quipping at one point during the season that he still wasn't sure that Konerko could beat him in a race.
God. Well, it's a...
Paul Konerko may have been the slowest in-shape man I have ever seen.
Yeah. Because the guy was...
You know, he wasn't overweight. He was lean. He was strong. He was in great shape. He was just really, really slow.
And he didn't have, you know, he ran when he ran, it looked like he was pretty quick. I mean, he took his knees came up pretty high. I mean, usually the guys that were like that were catchers that back before they could fix their knees, like Sherm Lawler or somebody like that. You know, basically, it was almost like the guy in Major League. That's all how the catchers were. What was his name? The catcher with the bad knees. Tom Berenger's role. What was the guy's name?
Oh, Jake. Yeah, I know Jake. Who you're talking about. Jake. I can't remember the character name.
Jake something. with the good looking girlfriend. What's her name? Anyway, Kevin, I just get this.
Well, before you jump off of it, the tweet, the glorifying violence. Did you read what it said?
Yeah, it did not. I didn't say it looked to me like it was glorifying violence. Well, he did.
Yeah, it didn't look at all. And I don't understand Twitter. Out of all the things over the years, all the things that Trump has posted, the one that got them exercised yesterday was a complaint about mail-in voting being ripe for fraud.
Yeah, which...
And you know, that's the one. That's the one that was just a bridge too far. Unbelievable. You know, the thought process is amazing to me.
Well, the thing that gets lost, Kevin, and this is today's world, or maybe it was always like this. I think it's today's world more because you get to see it easier. My view of what, you know, a president, for lack of a better term, I mean, should do all day. I mean, I think that if all of a sudden my clients called here 30 times in a row and they found me on the golf course and, which, you know, can you, if you even can play golf, I guess you can do that now, or doing something, or, he's in the bar. it's noon. What's he doing in the bar at noon? I mean, at some point, you'd say, my job is to watch the markets, watch the news, because my clients are doctors, lawyers. That's what they're paying me to do, right? To take care of their investments on a daily, hourly basis, whatever it happens to be. Now, that doesn't mean you got to do a trade every 20 minutes. I mean, hopefully you don't at all. But the point being is that that's my job, man. That has been the job of a money manager. That's why I get so aggravated with the people at Merrill and the rest of these people that just put you in stocks on January 2nd, charge you a bunch of money, and you don't see them at the end of the year. If the market went up there to here, and if not, you know, it's Trump's fault or Obama's fault or somebody. So, but I'm saying, in my mind, that's how I define, like, my job. Now, I would define a president's job as being one of the most difficult jobs in the world. And if you actually sat your behind in the Oval Office, that there would be reports daily from every different cabinet official, every different this, every different that, every threat thing in the world. Your morning threat assessment meeting would take 2 hours if you went by this. If you actually cared about what was happening in, you know, Ukraine and this place and wanted to keep up on all this stuff. The job, I can't even imagine, Kevin, what it would take mentally. I mean, I read about Bill Stevenson during the war, who was the head of the British Secret Service, and they said the man read the equivalent of a Victorian novel a day. I mean, I can't imagine him taking 4 hours out in the morning to watch every TV show to see if anybody was saying anything bad about him, and tweeting back and forth with a bunch of idiots. And not only that, receiving tweets from a bunch of idiots and retweeting out other people's tweets. I mean, that to me, what is he doing? But now that's become
normal.
Well,
and you throw that in, I would, you know, it would be interesting, and I don't know if somebody's doing this, but they should have camera crews following him and just saving it. This is, you know, not for current consumption, but for eventual. Because everything that I have heard described about his day, one is he doesn't sleep much, so he's up really early in the morning. They deliver him about a 2-inch stack of articles every day to read. He's on the phone all day.
Yeah, I agree with
all kinds of people, you know, in government, out of government, and so on. And you know, he just sits at that desk and it's dial this and dial that. And then there's all of these tweets in there, and the TV is on. And you know what a strange day that must be.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he absorbs it all, or if he absorbs it all, or you know, or what. But you know, he's constantly he's talking to people in Congress all the time. He's talking to business people all the time. He's got all this stuff going. Then the meetings, then the photo ops, and all of that. And I don't know how it all squeezes into a day.
Well, I what I'm saying is, if I did all that, I would say that the deep dark dive report from the Veterans Administration needs a read for an hour or two. I don't know that he does that. I mean, he could very well. I've also heard rumors that he emerges from his office or the private residence at like 10 o'clock because he's up at the crack of dawn watching every news show or not even news shows, other stuff. I mean, but I'm saying it. I don't know how, but people are thinking now this is the job, that it's that the president's supposed to defend and tweet all day long. God, if heaven forbid, if somebody elected me, you'd never see a tweet.
Tweets would be pretty low on my priority list. I mean, I'm with you there.
I mean, but people say now this is what like presidents do. They need to be rock star TV people, like Mark Cuban. Other than selling a company to Yahoo, who was absolutely moronic for buying it for like $1 billion or $2 billion, then shutting the place down. I mean, and I sure wish it was me. It's not like there wasn't a talent there. But now he's like a TV gadabout. It's not like he's a bad guy. He was on the show once when Dr. J was here. He's a friend of John's. I actually like the guy, but where does that put him in the, other than being a face on TV that people all recognize, where does that put him as qualifying for be a president? The president that I think, you know, somebody who I think should be qualified for that job. Now, there's probably a few people around that are, and I guarantee you they're not going to get close to the place. Right? I mean, they're, somebody I would say like a James Baker would have been. He wanted no part of running. I mean, look at probably, there's probably some amazingly thoughtful senators and representatives there. They want no part of it. I mean, what are we sentencing ourselves to? And now we got this joke of an election system here in Chicago to where there's no vetting process whatsoever. Anybody who wants to run, runs. So 10 people run. Then the city decides, well, this is a joke. So nobody votes. So the two people that run for the mayor, the runoff election, are somebody who got 90,000 votes and somebody who got 80. So these two people got 170,000 votes out of 3 million people, 2.7 million people, and one of them is going to be mayor? And how does that?
Apparently so.
Apparently so. I mean, so what we...
Now, you know, the other thing to consider here, too, is have you ever known anybody who is like a carrier of chaos?
Seems to be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are people in the world. I once had a boss who was this way, and one of the people who worked for me had the perfect term for it. He said it's like tornadoes when he comes through the department. It's like a tornado comes through, upsets everything, and then leaves, and then it's gone. And you know, it's a really strange thing, but I sort of think that Trump is one of those. I don't know. I'm not up close and personal to see it, but he's involved in everything enough to stir the pot, and then he does it, and that's sort of what you see with the tweets, and that's why I suspect he's this way. It's just I know enough to blast out something and get everybody's shorts in a knot, and then move on to the next thing.
And by the way, a lot of the people who like me love that, because they like me to insult people they don't like, essentially. But I think anybody...
Yeah, well, and, you know, he's got that vulgarian part to him as well, but I'm not even talking about the insulting. I'm just talking about, you know, I'm going to stir things up. It's, you know, and then, you know, move on and let somebody else deal with the carnage.
Well, I think anybody, the chaos people, I'm going to try and define it for you, Kevin, is anybody who comes into a situation and who essentially criticizes the process and criticizes the people that are using whatever process they're using without any sort of a solution, then just leaves. It's one thing to say, interesting point. Some of the guys at Pullman actually were terrific bosses, Kevin. I mean, they had all their people work for them. They weren't afraid to criticize, but they always in a positive way. And I remember one of my buddies, Stan Barton, is there. Talk about a name. Stan was a character, but he was the head of the cost accounting group. Nobody even knows what that does anymore. But Stan was a real bright guy, and he hires this guy, and they're doing some stuff. And the guy says to Stan, "What are you doing it that way for? I got a better way." And Stan says, "Look me right in the eye." He goes, "We need this stuff done this week. You do it my way this week, without any more bitching." He says, "By next Monday, we will have a meeting. If you got a better way, I'm all ears." But right now, I don't need any criticism. Just do it my way. Next week, if you got a better way, I'm all yours. Because I don't want to do it. Yeah. You can make it easier.
Well, you know, I have some strongly held beliefs about, you know, how you go about management. I'm fine with that one.
Yeah. Because this week, we got 15 people doing it one way. Do it the same way. Next week, if you can make it easier, we can take Friday off. I guarantee you, you got allies all over the place. Right? I mean, there are people who just stir things up and leave. Okay, we're all screwed up. We know that. Now what do we do? There's no, it's like saying that the,
Leave, or, you know, in his case, he's probably used to saying, okay, now I stirred the pot. Here, you, and he'll point at you, and he'll say, take care of this.
Yeah.
You know, you go fix it. And that works if you have really good people you can point at. But one of the things I've observed about Trump is he gets enamored of people real quickly and puts them into positions of importance, and they'll fall out of favor just as quickly in many cases. You know, he's got a few people who've been around his administration since the beginning, but not many, because, you know, he gets so enamored of these people, and then we find out that they really aren't very good at what they do, or they're charlatans, or they're corrupt, or whatever they are, and off they go. You can't, you know, that kind of turnover is counterproductive.
Well,
you lose all your continuity, and you're not operating with a purpose at that point.
Well, Kevin, we talked a little bit earlier about, again, I try and tie things together a little bit, about, you know, the city rules and how we're never going to get rid of all seven of the rules. There'll, you know, be two of them there when you know, your grandkids have grandkids. But some of the things that the Fed is doing, I'm just looking here as a headline article today. The corporations in the midst of the Fed buying up all these bonds and stuff and keeping these rates really low, corporations have raised $1 trillion in the bond market at rates that are pretty darn low. They're repaying old debt, they're doing this, and probably looking around to take over other companies, which, you know. But once you get into this morass of the Fed backstopping whatever comes to their desk, and if you're in a position where they're not, I run the risk. It's the same argument as the virus. Are we really talking about now we're maintaining behavior like for a long time? The difference between this, they keep talking about what the Fed is doing versus 2008. 2008 was a liquidity crisis in various parts of the financial system to where liquidity broke down. But the Fed didn't really put their imprimatur, for lack of a better term, on value over a long period of time. This is different. I mean, there's no liquidity crisis. You know, maybe there was a few weeks ago in municipal bonds, but nobody has to sell a municipal bond. They're mostly owned by insurance companies forever. It's a very illiquid market. Every time I get a client that brings one in, I have a hell of a time selling it for a decent price. And that's what RBC and a bunch of other people helping me. I think we do a good job, and still it's a pain in the behind, because there's just not a market. So, but that's different than saying we're going to maintain these bonds at 105% of value, even if the company goes under. That is a strategy, Kevin. I don't know where that's coming from, and I don't see how that is anywhere near long term, unless we just plan on printing money forever, which maybe we do. But this idea of now this print money forever, we're because of the news conferences, because of all the other stuff that's happening and the tweets and this and the other, I don't think people are sitting down and saying, what exactly are we doing here? Where's this money coming from? I mean, we're talking about people that are, now we're talking about a $2 trillion infrastructure program. We're not going to borrow that from anybody, Kevin. We're just going to print money and do it. That's that. Now we're talking about a semi-permanent type of situation, where we're gonna make money available for all the money that's been lost by all the people that have lost it that are not coming back. All the beers that haven't been sold, all the rent that hasn't been paid, all the mortgages that aren't gonna be paid. You can't cover that by printing money. And yet we're moving into this phase and we're kinda letting people think that that's the solution. And that's one hell of a message.
Well, it's not only is it the solution, but then it is a guarantee that we'll have to artificially suppress interest rates indefinitely, because if we don't, we won't be able to afford the service on the debt. And so what's going to happen with the low interest rates is everybody who relies on interest rates for, you know, on fixed incomes is going to be totally screwed.
Well, and people go back to, when you hear even, what's his name, Cruz talking about going back to the gold standard. First of all, the gold standard, you know, it's not that it's antiquated, but it is. It's not that it's antiquated, but it is. There's a statement. With the gold standard or any other kind of standard.
That's a song by, what did we say, the Laurie's List of what?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, that's their first top 100 hit.
Yes. But what the gold standard did is it put people, it essentially put a discipline on central banks of various countries to not do what we're doing now. To not just degrade your currency. Because when we're in the Civil War, the first thing we did is go off the gold standard. And we issued greenbacks. All right, so and after the war, and this is one of the amazing cases of how your money supply can be shrinking, and you're actually in a the deflationary period, and still your economy can expand. And when you get the people right now telling you that deflation is this huge enemy and blah 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 blah, I can point to you at least one, maybe two or three times of our history where we had tremendous growth in a deflationary time. So they're not right when they say that, but they'll say it anyway. So when we dragged the greenbacks out of the system, we essentially decreased the money supply because we wanted to get back on the gold standard, because that was the way we got back and be part of essentially the world countries, and not just being a bunch of guys shooting each other over here. You know, because I don't know what the world thought of us during our Civil War. I mean, they must have thought, God, those guys are really idiots shooting each other like that. Because, I mean, was there ever a more brutal war than our Civil War, for God's sake?
Probably not. I don't know if you watched the, what was it, History Channel or somebody had a series on Grant. And it's really good. It's definitely worth seeing.
Well, what's his name?
That's exactly what they, you know, we really saw the brutality of it.
Well, and the weird part of it is in Lincoln's mind, The I often talk about measles hitting a Civil War camp. The deaths while the armies were waiting to fight were so dramatic in the camps, because Lincoln's like, what's the difference? I mean, even though the battles were brutal, when you start talking about people walking,
yeah, not fighting is just as brutal.
Yeah, I mean, when you start talking about the, you know, when you look at Gettysburg and Pickett's charge, you're talking about thousands of human beings or hundreds of human beings walking, not even shooting, across a field in broad daylight with no protection whatsoever, not even the thought of a bulletproof vest or anything, going against cannons and guns. Just hoping enough guys make it there to be able to walk over the thing and kick ass on the other guys.
What is like storming the beach at Normandy?
Well, we at least tried a little bit. We had some cover. We had air cover. We had some attempt. To do something. I mean,
Let's go back. I want to jump back because I know I only have a minute or two here. I want to jump back to the point that you made, and I think it's really important. Is we say things as if they're true, and how crazy it is that we live in a time where we have the data. You talk about cost accounting. Part of the reason cost accounting is a lost art is because the databases are so good that we don't need to model anything. We have the real data. And so we're in this world where we have everything we need in terms of, you know, available data and the ability to crunch it, and yet we still operate on truisms.
Yeah.
Which is just nuts, and that's certainly something that that we're doing right now with this, with the pandemic. At this point, there was this conventional wisdom at the beginning that got us all shut down, and it just got accepted. And now there's data, so much data, and so much information to the contrary, and yet we're clinging to the truisms.
Well, and you say
it just makes no sense to me as a society. I don't know what we're doing.
Well, yeah, I don't castigate Pritzker for making the decisions he made earlier, I castigated him for driving down the street and realizing, well, maybe this part of it wasn't so hot. This wasn't so hot. And bending as time went by. I mean, my guys are buying blue jeans at Target. Why can't they buy them at the blue jean place? I mean, but when I say cost accounting, I'm saying our people are stone cold ignorant of this, Kevin, because I'm going to say Pritzker or Lori should have somebody telling them, hey, wait a minute. You can't cover your variable costs in a restaurant with 25% of the people. And the first question should be, okay, what does it have to be? So this guy, I'm not talking about paying all their bills. We know they can't pay the taxes and probably all the rent, but can we at least cover the night's food and people? I don't even think you can do that at 25%. Cost accounting is variable cost, fixed cost type of thing instead of financial accounting, which is...
Yeah, I understand that.
You know that, but I'm just for the listeners. But I don't think that...
I'm trying to reach for it, but...
Well, we got a dash, Kevin. We'll talk about it on Wednesday, buddy. Take care of yourself.
Okay, looking forward to the second hour.
NASDAQ futures up 11.75. When we come back, we have a kind of a rare treat, a gentleman named... Dan, I'm going to say this right, Janitas, and he came out maybe a month ago and gave us a couple of tips in the market, and got both of them were huge winners. Can't wait to hear him again. S&P futures again, down 675. NASDAQ, however, up 11. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Sir Jack Silverman on the board. S&P futures down 8. NASDAQ futures up 14. So we've turned around. We were kind of flatlined and we were both down. And now NASDAQ has turned up. Individual stocks, I got Apple up 260. We got Cisco up 40 cents. Nothing major going on, really. We got big move in silver this morning. It was up 30 cents SLV. So we had... That's happening. We also have with Mr. Dan Janitis, I think I got that right, President and Chief Investment Officer at Kratos. Dan, how are you, buddy? Good to have you back. I said to Maddie last week, I go, hey, where the hell's that guy who was out a few weeks ago? It was so good. And he goes, oh, you mean Dan? I go, yeah. So here you are. How you been?
Good, great. Terrific, thank you.
Are you working at home? What are you doing? Are you?
Yes, I have a home office, and we're working away. This
good
has been
you.
A great work environment. A great time in our market because we're finding a lot of good opportunities and, it's an exciting time in our market.
How do you, by the way, the ones that you talked about last time have been big winners. How do you, by the way, I'm very jealous because as an index trader for 19 years, I was always traded, you know, quote, the market. And I always have a lot of stocks and my clients that bring stocks in and some bonds and so forth. And we try and do the best we can there and get some help, but, by and large, I mean, I run kind of an index program for people, and I'm always worried about, them being protected and so forth. And I've always had a jealousy, shall we say, for people that no matter what seem to be able to pluck the pearl out of whatever, the cesspool. And it seems to me like you're one, but my question is, how do you can't totally discount what's going on in the world. I mean, can you? I mean, how do you deal with that? I mean, if today, for instance, if you pull out, which hopefully you will for us, five or six bonds that look like good ones to you, I mean, how do you forget about or account for the fact that, you know, central banks have poured, you know, $3 trillion into a place or $4 trillion in the last 8 weeks or something like that? I mean, what is it do to you? Do you try to ignore it? Do you try and take account of it, advantage of it? I mean, how does that work?
We do pay attention, and we actually have to pay attention every day to everything that's going on because it all of that news has an impact on everything we invest in. The way I would describe what we invest in is it's not necessarily tied to the market. So we have we generally have low correlation with, say, the S&P 500 or some other general measures of the markets. We generally don't trade, like if we're going to use a Barclays aggregate ETF, if you will, or as a measure of the bond market, we generally don't trade in lockstep with that either. So the way we add alpha is through research and by finding names that don't necessarily follow the market so that we can have really strong performance regardless of the market environment. That all being said, we absolutely have to pay attention to what's going on in the market because a lot of what's going on will not only drive our markets, our financial markets and the economy, but it'll also drive the flow of funds. And it's really the flow of funds that will help determine whether it's the appropriate time to buy or sell.
Well, how do you, I mean, in today's world, where we are right now, how do you handicap? I mean, I'm not going to try and get in a political discussion, but for God's sake, we're sort of in it. No matter what we do, it's always a bird sitting on our shoulder. I mean, how do you handicap? I mean, right now we have, I see everybody on TV and, you know, whatever, not so much on radio, but everybody on TV, everybody's enthusiastic. We're all coming out of this. We're all whatever. And I look at this versus, say, 2008. We can go back a lot further. I think both of us could. But it seemed like once we reach a tipping point, you know, be it being the, you know, the Russian debt problem of how many years ago or the Argentinian debt, once you reach kind of that day where there's a tipping point, no matter how much damage there is, it seems like from that day forward, even a little bit, things get better. And the stuff that has been, the baby that's been thrown out with the bathwater that you seem pretty darn good at finding, once you find it, you almost never look back. It, this particular thing seems different to me. I mean, right now, today, well, we're not even opening up Chicago next week, but no matter what you do, I mean, I look out the window, I look at oil companies, I don't care what you guys are doing, you're not making any money because there's nobody driving. I mean, right. You know, so I mean, it almost, I mean, if this goes on for another 5 months, you could be Solomon, and I don't think your company is going to be around much. I mean, how are you accounting for that?
I think it's a good question. The way the environment that we're in has been very unusual, but the one thing I'll say, having been in this market or in this profession since the mid 80s, I've seen a lot of change. And with technology and with the flow of information, it seems that everything is speeded up. So when we had the sell-off based on COVID and slower demand, it was rapid. When oil prices declined by 31% about 7 or 8 weeks ago on that one day, it was rapid. And likewise, I think the response to this has been very rapid. The market seems at times to be just moving ahead and not paying attention to the news of high unemployment numbers, some tensions going on in you know, with Hong Kong and China, other things going on overseas, and certainly things that are going on domestically. All of that does play into our market, but I think it's also important to know that the Main Street and Wall Street are somewhat disconnected now. A lot of people are working from home. A lot of businesses, for example, our business, has really not skipped a beat during this time. The medical profession, for example, has not skipped a beat. There are a lot of businesses that have continued to operate, you know, consultants, management consultants, there's engineers. I know engineers that are actually working harder than they ever had. So architects. So the businesses are still moving along. And when I see architects and engineers busy, that's usually a sign, a very good sign that the economy is going to continue to roll. There will be, I believe, an impact from this. I don't know exactly how it's when we're going to see it or to what degree we're going to see it, but certainly, as you're mentioning, on the credit side and on the, you know, when we're looking at the deficit increase this rapidly, it absolutely will have an impact. How we get impacted and the timing of that, I think, is still up in the air. Still a little soon to tell.
Why do you say that the medical community is okay? We had some guys on last week that work in a hospital in Virginia. They said the hospital losing $90 million a month, no elective surgeries and stuff.
The hospitals themselves may be losing money, just as in our industry, some of us have lost money because our fees go down when the asset values go down. But what I mean by that is that they're working. They're not necessarily unemployed. In fact, in some cases, they've been probably working more hours. There are segments of the medical community that have been, you know, there have been layoffs and there may be continued layoffs, but there is activity still. It's not, you know, we're not in a field where things are moving forward in the industry.
It is interesting how people have...
But the economic impact, I absolutely agree with you. The economic impact is just, I mean, we're just barely beginning to see that, and I think we're going to see more and more of that as time goes on.
It's funny how...
Whether it be at the state level or the industry level or the company level.
It's funny how people in different parts of the country have different things happening in their areas, because in the Chicago area, I won't go into our mayor again, I talked enough about her, but the way it's affected the medical community here, and I don't know about New York, but I'm just saying from right here, and I'm not expecting you to know what's going on here, but I'm going to say there's been more layoffs, other than the service industry, I mean, hospitality industry, more layoffs in hospitals here than any other industry. The entire I know guys who used to drink with in a bar that's now closed that were doctors. They haven't worked in ages. These guys are hand surgeons and those kind of guys that put, you know, fake knees in and so forth. They haven't worked in 10 weeks. I mean, maybe you could volunteer to go in the COVID spot, but basically the place is shut down. I'm assuming from what you're saying that it's not like that everywhere, is my take.
It's definitely not like that everywhere. And to give you a couple of examples, here in Florida, for example, a friend of mine had shoulder surgery, I want to say 4 to 6 weeks ago. So I think it really does depend on where you are. I grew up in the Boston area. I know that the hospitals there are very busy. In fact, a cousin of mine who's a nurse manager has gone back to work. So I do think it's localized. I mean, it is local. I think the point I was making when I was talking about that is that there still will be demand, if you will.
Yes.
There still will be, you know, the hand doctor is still going to at some point have to get back to work, and it's just a question of time. There will be demand, built up demand.
Well, I agree with you there. I mean, yeah. the amount of elective, matter of fact, somebody was writing about it in the Tribune the other day that they're worried about the health of the rest of the population. Because
yes.
People are afraid to go to an emergency room, and all these elective surgeries are nowhere. That there's guys walking around that should be in getting a stent for their heart, and they're not. I mean, it's
right. No, exactly. I think that's going to change. I think the medical field in particular is ahead of the, you know, they understand this more than we do, and I certainly am not the one that wants to sound like the expert, but I do believe that that's going to change, and I think in some states, Florida included, we may be seeing more activity in the medical side than you are there in Chicago.
I got news for you. If anybody who's listening to the show in Chicago needs a shoulder fix, they're flying to Florida because it ain't happening here. But it's not happening here. I mean, unless you walk in and your left shoulder's on the right shoulder side or something. But so what the oil companies and how do you in something like this? I mean, I'm intrigued by, first of all, you're more enthusiastic about this than I am. I see the airlines that if, despite the fact that everybody says they're quote coming back some, if you were to just put today's, you know, just what's going to happen from today forward and forget about the last, you know, 10, 12 weeks and just say from today forward, how do they not go out of business? I mean, I look at United Airlines, I see them or Continental, the same place. I mean, American, how are they not, if they're at 50% capacity by Thanksgiving, which I think would be, you know, somewhat okay, I don't see how they make money there, do you? I
agree with you. I think there's, they've cut back so much. I'll use a parallel. Just as there's been cutbacks in the energy sector, tremendous cutbacks. We're actually now seeing a supply issue that we didn't see not too long ago. And in the airline industry, we're going to see more demand as time goes on. I think it's just a time of people getting comfortable flying and having developed a system for handling COVID and allowing passengers to be comfortable on board. And I've heard different stories there too, Matt. There's stories that I've heard of people leaving South Florida to go to New York and vice versa on packed planes where every seat is taken. And I've heard a story from a client that I had dinner with actually here in South Florida last night. He had just come back from Seattle.
Wait a minute, you got to go to a restaurant and have dinner?
We had dinner at a restaurant, Houston's, that
wow.
only had allowed 20% capacity. We did our homework before we went in, social distancing. I was very pleasantly surprised. I think they did a terrific job.
They can't make money there.
Keeping people apart, the plastic and the personal protective gear on all of the employees. And I kind of felt it was like private dining, but without the extra, without the extra people. So it's, Houston's at least seems to have it down. There'd be other places I think I would be concerned about. I think the organizations, the companies that have actually really worked hard to try to make it work, going back to work, if that makes sense, are doing a good job. So, but the airline, going back to the airline, yes, that's going to be a major issue. We've been through this before with airlines. I was the investment director for the Airline Pilots Association for a while, and that was after 9/11, and that whole industry went through tremendous times, and we actually helped restructuring by taking some of the terminated pension plans or frozen pension plans and setting up defined contribution or 401k plans for the pilots. And that was a tough period, and we got through it. I mean, pilots' salaries were slashed and halved. A lot of the benefits were taken away. And so we have been there before. I think we will get there. I have a client that runs a pretty high-end travel business. She says that domestic will come back before international. International is definitely some questions, especially when you fly into certain parts of the world like South America.
Well, those Hong Kong routes got to be a one you don't want to be flying. I mean, there's some places, you're right, it might take a really, really long time, if ever.
Right.
I mean, I was, I mean, you know, the statistics better than me. We had, between, Thanksgiving and whatever, 400,000 people went back and forth from here to China. I had no idea there was that many people flying
exactly.
back. I mean, when does that get back to that number? You and I will be, like, pretty old.
Right. Yeah.
Well, how do you, Dan, how do you, when you, I mean, obviously, there's a black swan in every industry, and I think maybe you would agree with me that in our industry, even if you work hard, you don't really need to be, quote, lucky, but you'd like to have an absence of bad luck, if that even makes any sense. You're not looking to buy a call at $2 one day and have it trade at 20 necessarily, although you'd like that. You still want to buy one at 20 and have it trade at 2. I mean, you know what I'm saying? When you look at the debt of like a leasing company, the debt of somebody, how do you even factor in? I mean, I know in my business, on the equity side, I'm not saying you don't do equities, you do. On the equity side, I mean, I look at these events that I've been through and some that I've read about, and I kind of put somewhat of a mental judgment on it. How do you know that all of a sudden the world's best leasing company, some disease comes flying through and all of a sudden, you know, 9,000 people don't pay their rent? Or something like that. I mean, I can't believe that the airlines are paying full bore on these leases on these planes. I mean, you know better than me, but how can they be?
Right. No, I think the answer is you don't always know. In something like this event, is an event that nobody could predict. What we do at Kratos is we actually do a lot of homework. I mean, we meet with the management teams of the companies we invest in. We're not investing in the larger cap growth companies. We're invested in smaller cap companies. We have direct access to management. I have a team of analysts that works for me. And we also invest in the high yield debt. So and especially on the bond side, when you analyze in high yield debt, you do a worst case scenario because one of the type of analysis you do on bonds is liquidation analysis. And you're looking at the probability of default. So even though the probability of default on bonds, last year nobody was talking about default rates. We haven't seen default rates other than maybe 1 or 2% over the last decade. So when you're analyzing a company, we really want to know everything we can, and we really want to look at the worst case scenario. So that style of management, that style of doing research carries over to small cap companies that we invest in, even though it's not traditionally part of the traditional equity analysis, if you will. So when that happens, at least with bonds, you want to know that you have protection. You want to know that you have, you look at the covenants and the bond issues, and you want to know that you have protection and that you have, cash flow, that you have assets that could be sold. Even though they may not be attractive assets today, they may very well be attractive assets 6 months or a year from now.
What one of the gentlemen comes on the show, he's a municipal and state, a municipal and local bond guy. He said that what the Fed has done to that industry, it's driven the prices so high by buying stuff there, where they had no business doing, that they've driven their regular customers out of the mix. These insurance companies never going to buy a Chicago Muni bond for 1.5%.
Right.
Are you running into any of the wacky pricing that the Fed is putting on stuff? Is that hurting you? Or is it helping you, or neither or both?
Well, it's helping in the Chicago bond, the Chicago muni bonds that we purchased several years ago.
Right, right.
Some of which are coming due. But in terms of new purchases, I'm a value manager, so I generally will not, we'll stay away if we don't see the opportunity. We're looking at an opportunity versus, say, a high yield bond. And even if you're looking at a taxable account, you may not be participating in a Chicago bond. You might look at a credit, a corporate credit that has, provides a much more significant return, but may have the same credit risk, if you will.
Okay. Do you have any that you'd like to share? I'm fascinated by what you do because it's all the stuff I always wanted to do and never could.
It's fun. I really, and this has actually been a really great period, a really enjoyable period because I've been waiting for this period for the last decade. We look at distress. We look at names that have been beaten up. We do our homework. We do reports on every company. We do company visits, conference calls. And we, for a small firm, this is our value added or our alpha. And within our space, as I mentioned, I think on the last time I was on, I recommended Neighbors Industries.
Right, preferred.
And I said there were two ways that you could participate. One is with the bonds. They have bonds that mature in September, on September 15th, that are paying 5%. And they're still trading at a discount, which means you could buy them at 97. And you're going to get a decent yield to maturity. The company has the cash flow. They're free cash flow positive. They're bondholder friendly. They're planning on paying this debt off. So it's very unlikely that anything could occur between now and then. And I would pretty much say it's a layup to get that kind of return in the short-term period.
Well, when do these mature again?
They mature on September 15th.
Okay.
The ticker symbol is NBR, and they're the 5% bonds that mature on September 15th, 2020.
Wow, so short guys.
Short guys that are trading with a nice coupon but are trading at 97. So they'll be maturing at 100, and on September 15th, you will get your full principal plus your final interest payment. So bonds are often thought of as boring, but that's a pretty decent return in a few short months.
Today's world is
gold.
That'll
give you a little bit of steady income and a nice yieldy return during what will continue to be, we believe, a volatile period. So that's probably the more conservative way to play that. Play Neighbors. We also, I recommended the preferred stock.
Correct.
When I was on last time, which has actually tripled since I made the recommendation. It's up about 300%. It was trading at in the high twos, I mean $2, and now it was trading at a little over eight yesterday. It closed. So that is, again, it's a mandatory preferred. They're required to pay 6%. It matures, unlike some preferreds. It actually has a maturity date of June of 2021. So it's basically a 1 year.
When it matures, do you get money or you get common?
You will get money. This trades more like a bond.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a, if it quacks like a bond, it might be a bond or something like that.
You know, exactly. And in this case, you get the equity kicker. You know, the preferred is traded as low as two handle, and it traded as high as the high teens. Now it's trading around eight. I think there's still upside.
It's funny. You've been around about the same time I have. I started in 81. I had a couple of jobs beforehand. So I would say real jobs, being the trading floor, not real jobs, because I think yours is always a real job, doing all the research. When you seem like you still put value and going to see people and researching the countries, and it sounds like you're not afraid to talk to somebody in person, without telling anything out of school. Is that still valuable? I would say that it is, but it's not just another older dude. I would say that it is. What do you learn from that? Is it just
absolutely? Yeah, it's absolutely valuable. I think you know, from a competitive point of view, there's not many RIAs that are doing that. In fact, we clear with, our service provider is Interactive Brokers, and one of the guys I was talking to there the other day said, I don't know anybody else who does this, Dan. So it is valuable in a number of ways. The management team really is what drives the company. They have this strategic vision. They create the corporate culture. They generally will be, maybe not so much to the equity guys, but they'll generally be pretty forthright with information and not, you know, telling you only public information, but being able to ask questions and that you may not hear when you're on an earnings call, for example. But going and meeting with them, developing a relationship with them so that when we go through a period like we have, and we own a number of bonds of energy companies, I can call the CEO directly or the CFO directly and say, hey, what's going on? What's going on in China? I own a company that Ballard, BLDP, we own the stock.
We've traded
it's
some
of
that.
A smaller cap company that does fuel cells. I have a call directly into the senior management there to find out what's going on in China because they have a JV, a joint venture with the Chinese company, and which is actually doing quite well. And this company makes the fuel cells for electronic vehicles. They tend to, their focus is on buses and public transportation, and they're big in China, they're big in Europe and California.
Dan, we only have 15 seconds. I'd love to have you back to talk, if this continues to unravel with Hong Kong, I'd love to have you talk about that.
Sure.
I have a feeling that's a, by the way, give us a quick plug. You got 10 seconds.
Sure. Kratos, you know, we do a fair amount of research. We're in our prime. This is our style, and our strategy is really in favor right now. And KratosCapital.com, you can find information. And, we're doing good.
Take care of yourself, buddy. We will have you back. Thank you very much. S&P Futures down 10, NASDAQ Futures up 9. We'll be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do at PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali, Jack Silverman on the board. S&P futures just took a little bit of dip here. We got the consumer spending down 13.6% versus 12.9% expected. I don't know if that's what's doing it. There's all kinds of stuff flying around this morning. They actually have personal income up dramatically, up 10%. I don't know where the hell that's coming from. Maybe Carl can enlighten us on that in a minute. S&P futures down 14.50 now. NASDAQ futures down 9, but they're flying back and forth pretty crazily. Dow futures down like 170. Over in Europe, we've got, again, delayed Tavier. DAX down 78.7%, FTSE down 57.9%, CAC around down 12.2%. We've got bonds of 0.66, our 10-year, the Bund minus 0.44, Japan minus 0.003. So those guys are like dead flat, have been for weeks now. Oil down 65 cents, 33.06. Brent up 69 cents, 34.60. Natural gas up 1 cent. 184, and we've got Arbob back to $1 even, $1. And we've got gold up $17, 1745. This is a big move here. Silver up 34 cents, 1831. I'm actually long some calls here for today, so that's kind of nice. Jack, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
We're looking pretty good on the traffic standpoint. We have no accidents to report. However, we do have some slight traffic on the Eden site, slightly south of the city. For weather, it is currently 60 degrees, partly cloudy, with a high of 70 degrees. And in Phoenix, it is currently 79 degrees, clear, with a high of 112. This day in sports, we're going to head back to 1980, and we're going to head a little bit south to Indiana. We're going to talk about Larry Bird, the Hick from the French Lick.
Yep.
On this day, he beat out Magic, Magic Johnson to be the 1980 Rookie of the Year, thanks to a very impressive stat line. Scoring 21 points, 10 rebounds, and 4 assists in his rookie season, and leading the Celtics from 29-53 to 61-21, a 32-win improvement.
That's a real number. Jeez. Well, so did they have McHale at that time? Who was he after?
I think he may have been slightly after.
Because when the two of them got together, then it was Katie bar the door. They were pretty good.
Yeah, this team with Larry, his rookie season, Cedric Maxwell, Tiny Archibald, Dave Cowens.
That's right, they had Tiny Archibald. Dave Cowens is a hell of a player.
Yeah, Pete Maravich, but a little bit older, Maravich.
Yeah, but Pistol Pete was a player.
Yeah, especially was on the Jazz.
Carl, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Pistol Pete, his dad used to make him dribble the ball outside the car when they were driving. Outside the window. If he missed the dribble, he'd stop and go get it.
Well, that's one way to get your skill level up,
Pat. Yeah. So how are you, bud?
Well, I'm doing fine. That personal income and spending number.
Yeah.
You want to talk about blowing one's own brains out. The federal government has If you think that's not going to reflect back into prices, boy, are you dumb.
Yeah.
I just, that sort of thing, you know, people have been talking about this situation with unemployment checks being larger than salaries for the last month, right? And yet you also had the people say, well, you know, we had to do this because people are hurting, they lost their jobs, da da da. You had to do something, but you certainly didn't have to do that.
No.
And that you did that is now going to come back in all sorts of really bad ways.
Well, it's the when you start talking about a couple of $1 trillion package, and the other side of it is, I mean, I'm certainly not going to accuse you of this, Carl, but sometimes people look at those around them and the alligator closest to the boat, and they somehow think that that's the one that's the problem. Even now, though, with the $600, you know, with a lot of the PPP stuff going to maybe firms that in retrospect, you know, maybe we're doing all right all along or something, I'm going to say that that's 2-5% of the entire largesse that's being bestowed on bigger people. But it's something you and I can put a handle on, because I was just in Indiana last weekend. My friend's friend, my girlfriend's friend, invited us down for a week or a day, and she was saying she knew somebody that was one of those sitting on a sofa making more than they ever did, and they're justifying it by, I'm not going back to work until it's perfectly safe, and they should extend this to the end of the year. Because even in October, I'm not going to feel, quote, comfortable going back to work for half what I'm making now. So, yeah, it's out there. But, I mean, I think that there's businesses. I mean, we're talking about $1 trillion that the corporate bond people went out and have raised in the last 3 or 4 weeks they could never have done if the Fed wasn't pouring money on them. So even though we don't like somebody's ass on the sofa making more than they should have, it still pales in comparison to what other people the largest other people here, I think.
Well, it's actually worse than that, because if you look at the what's in the CARES Act, the Federal Reserve is authorized specifically under that law to leverage all of that money that is being thrown out into the economy in the form of these loans. And yet they have not actually leveraged any of it yet.
Well, buying a bond is
the problem. The problem is people say, well, this was a $2 trillion package. No, it wasn't. It was a $12 trillion package.
All right, wait a minute. Define, it has different definitions and used different places. When you say leverage, what are you talking about? They're buying corporate bonds, they're buying muni bonds, they're buying those kinds of things. Now, to me, that's, you know, buying a hope and a prayer. I guess that's one definition of leverage. You're saying, when you say leverage, what are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is that the way that act is structured, the Federal Reserve can take every dollar that is, well, except for the $600 checks given to people, all of the corporate funds that were and are being dispersed can be taken back in as debentures and then lent back out against at a ratio of 10-1 by the Fed.
All right, they created the money out of nowhere. They write the check. They buy the debenture. Debenture, just like the mortgages 5-6 years ago or 10 years ago, are sitting there on their balance sheet. But nobody's gonna lend out, buy a mortgage. It's sitting there. But a debenture, you could conceivably go back in the market and sell again. But if you do, you're taking the money right back in, right? So what's?
Well, no, because what happens is this. Remember how banking in general works. You take it in deposit, you have to keep 10 cents of it, and you can loan out the other 90, right? Once you did, and this is that's the classical way. Of course, nowadays, the reserve is zero, but because of our wonderful people that did that after 2008. However, the problem is that once you do that, the person takes, they buy a house.
Right.
Okay. The person that built the house now has the money that you paid in order to buy the house.
Correct.
And they can then turn around and again spend that same dollar again
a second time. So the way that this classically works is that it's a declining balance. I have a dollar, I lend it, 90 cents of it can be lent, the other 10 has to be retained as reserves, and then the next time it's 89 cents so on and so on. Okay? So this is classically how this works. But the CARES Act allows the Fed to take all of those so-called loans, those PPP loans, and the other money dispersed as lending, and turn them just as you would any other deposit. However, it can be done directly to the Federal Reserve. Now, that means that the expansion of the balance sheet at the Fed that's authorized within the CARES Act is approximately $13 trillion. It's about half of the size of the economy.
All right, do you mind if I, let me start from the beginning, and then you tell me how this is different. If Carl has a T-bill sitting at some bank, and it's his T-bill, the Fed is going to go out and they're going to buy T-bills on the open market. This is normal stuff. This is the normally how they raise and lower the money supply through the open market window. This is in 1970 they did this, or 80, or in regular times. They're going to go out and they're going to buy that $100,000 T-bill. It now becomes cash in Carl's account. You put it in the bank. If the bank turns around, let's say the reserve requirement is 20%, which I think is a lot lower than that now. So if they can then lend out $80,000 to somebody else who puts it back in the bank, so they can lend out $64,000. So it always did have this incredible multiplier effect, correct? I mean, if they wanted to raise the money supply by $1 billion, they never had to buy $1 billion worth of T-bills. They probably had to buy 20% of that or 30% of that, right? There always was
right, and there's so, and, but the thing is, well, the traditional reserve ratio was 10%.
Okay. So tell me how this is different.
During the 2008 crash, Ben Bernanke got inserted into the TARP bill, that thing that started out as one page from Paulson and ended up as a 700-page monster.
Right.
Had one sentence inserted into there that allowed him to set the reserve ratio to zero.
Okay. See, when I was learning this at the feet of the people at the University of Chicago, the reserve rate was 20%.
Well, the thing about zero, of course, is it allows for infinite leverage, infinite money creation.
Right. So what I just said, the example I gave, is it used to be that if the $1,000 went in the account, it was Carl's, the bank could lend out $800. Then that person would put it back in the bank, and they could lend out $640. So really, your money supply is created by banks in our system, increasing and decreasing. And so when you get down to zero, which I buy a $1,000 T-bill from Carl for $1,000. They can turn around and lend $1,000 out. That guy puts it back in the bank. They lend $1,000. There's no decrease of this going forward. That's crazy, Carl. That's crazy.
But that's what happened during the 2008 bailout. I raised a lot of stink about it at the time because that is a recipe for a detonation of any monetary system. And to give the Federal Reserve the unreviewed ability to do that is nuts.
Except the only thing we got
going
for
it. Yet that's what they did. Now, what has happened with the CARES Act is that they have capped it off at 10%. But what that means is that trillion-ish, roughly, trillion and change, trillion four, that's in, other than the $600 payouts to individuals, all of that, none of that has ended up on the Fed's balance yet.
Well, the good news,
but
I think,
all
Carl,
of it will.
Right, the good news is I don't think you can get a loan out of a bank if you're a regular person right now.
Well, no, but the problem is this. Everyone says, oh, well, you know, this is a great line for individuals, yada, yada, yada. The impact of this down the road is not going, it's not going to show up for a couple of years. But when it does show up, it's going to be catastrophic.
Were you listening to your buddy Gutierrez the other day? The guy, was he Obama's Commerce Secretary?
No, I'm not sure I want to hear this.
What do you mean? He agreed with you 100%. He said, the inflation.
Oh, my God.
The inflation of 2021 is something we really got to watch out for. Because there's all this money in the system, there's usually a lag. Because I figure late this year, early next year, we got a problem.
Yeah, this is something that is the blowback from this is going to show up sometime, you know, a year, 2 years down the road, because that's about how long it takes before it really starts to get going.
I think we learned
this less than the 1970s, and of course, immediately forgot it. Right?
I never dreamed, but, Carl, in my lifetime, after going through that, and again, I have a personal relationship with it because I was the guy who did all the escalation clauses and stuff for Pullman for both the unions and the contract.
Right.
So, I mean, I was very aware. I mean, I lived it, right? I'd never dreamed, Carl, that we would play with that again in my lifetime. It was so disingenuous to the economy. However, this time, and I'm, you know, see if you run with me on this. I always like it when you agree with me. It's hard to, I didn't know I did something right. It's totally, totally different this time. When I say not in the aggregate, it's not going to be different, but in those days, the working bees, the middle class, for lack of a better term, and lower class, anybody who had savings somehow was protected because your interest rates were always like 1 or 2% higher than the inflation rate. And if you had a simple asset like a home, the home went up enough to where if you were a working guy with a home, you did not get hurt by this at all. In fact, once we got into it and you got inflation clauses in your contract, you might actually have benefited somewhat, a little bit. Now, other people, like me, who didn't own a home, and was not a union guy, I was getting 4% raises when the other guys were getting 12. So I was hurt by it pretty bad, and I knew that because I was calculating up stuff for other people. This time, I don't see any of that infrastructure in place, Carl. If we have a 12% inflation, I've seen in the last 3 weeks in Chicago, and it's not just me. People that some of the Hispanic guys who work in the building and you know in that neighborhood, he goes, big guy, the inflation. He goes, I can't believe the food prices; they've almost doubled in the last month. This time, Carl, it's going to eviscerate what's left of the middle class. It's totally different.
Oh yeah, no, and you know what? The other place that's going to absolutely be just insanely destructive is because we did nothing about the healthcare system,
right,
and health insurance in general,
right,
and that's a mandatory purchase because if you work for somebody else under Obamacare, they either have to provide for you as part of your job or they get fined. So what ends up happening is that this ends up reflected back into wages. So at the same time you have prices going up, your wages get suppressed.
Hey, I want to ask you. You're right, by the way, but since you are our maven on this, I've heard and a lot of people who, you know, friends and neighbors of people here, were sent home, especially in the hospitality industry or anything like that, were sent home. At first it was only going to be 15 to 30 days, and most people kept them on salary as best they could. And then after Jay Pritzker says, nah, it's going to be another 30 days, like at least, everybody got basically tossed off the wages and now getting paid. The companies, to the best they can, are at least hanging on to their health care because they're not officially fired. They're furloughed or whatever you want to call it. If people start coming back, maybe we can dodge that bullet, Carl, but if it's another month or two, I don't see that health care not getting jettisoned too. What does that do? I mean, the whole system, now we're talking about 40% of the people in the country are laid off. Are we going to have 40% of the people that used to be covered at work now without any health insurance, or is that the next problem they have?
Well, right now, what they're doing is most of these places, in order to keep the PPP money so that they don't end up having to pay it back as a loan, they're continuing to pay the premiums with the PPP money.
Right.
Okay, so they're laying you off, but, you know, and then here's the other problem. I have some friends of mine that are still employers, okay?
Like me.
The terms under which those funds were handed out keep changing. They're not exactly sure how long it will be before those terms start to become worse instead of better. But they keep being modified on them after the fact. So they get the cash, and now all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, you got to do this. So you got to do that. You know, this is, of course, the problem with taking handouts from the government, is that then they get to set the rules, and, oh, by the way, they can retroactively change them, what they do with taxes all the time, and that's been ruled constitutional. So this is going to become a huge problem down the road. My guess is that this is where the leverage and the turn of the crank is going to come from. But the people that think that somehow this is going to save folks, I'm sorry, it's not. There was no justification on the side for maintaining any of these constraints past the end of March. Zero. And now we're in a situation where the damage has been loaded in there. And what do you think the odds are that Congress takes any of this back? What is zero, right? I mean, that's not going to happen. But it has to happen, and it needs to happen now, because by the time that this goes into the Fed's balance sheet and starts to show up, it's too late to do anything about it.
Well, I would agree. And but there's not much thinking ahead here, Carl. I mean, just the PPP, and I'm sure I'm familiar enough with that, because a lot of my clients and everybody, you know, were asking us for advice on it, which we're not exactly given, but I know some people in the banking industry and so forth, and you're right, the rules continue to change. If you were a place that somehow was able to, or your people were actually working at home anyway, say, this has been a godsend to you. Because essentially for 2.5 months the government has paid your salaries. And then you're gonna get it forgiven, right? If you were a restaurant or a bar owner and actually weren't even open, I guess you could have continued to keep people on the payroll, but, you know, I guess, I don't know what the point of that would mean, you know what I'm saying? They weren't naturally on there. A lot of these people weren't even on there anyway. They're making, you know, $10 and plus tips or something like that.
Right, but see, it doesn't do you any good, because the problem is that you don't have anywhere, even in the so-called red areas, that has dropped the constraints. And without doing that, you can't make any money in the hospitality business at 50% occupancy.
No, I was just, the gentleman who was just on before you said he went out to dinner last night in Florida, your old stomping ground, went to a Houston's, it was 20% occupied, nothing but polyurethane all over the damn place. The wait staff, you know, you're sitting 6 feet away from the guy next to you. He says they're 20%. How the hell does somebody make any money at 20%? This is just the big people's way.
Well, not only that. Think about this. Are you going to go out to eat and spend $100 or $200, you know, $100 a person, right, or more, right, especially in a nice place, and yet it looks and feels like a hospital ICU ward?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
Well, neither am I. I'm gonna grill steaks at my house and drink beer on the couch.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. But you know, it's funny. He was saying that in Florida, the medical, you know, the hospitals, the medical people are doing very well. In Chicago, it's a total shutdown. If you're not a COVID ward, every other thing is down. I mean, I suppose if you walked in with a heart attack, they'd do something with you. But I mean, every piece of elective surgery. There's more in Chicago. I think more people have been laid off in the medical community than other than the service or the hospitality industry. I mean,
what he was talking about in Florida has got to be very local, because I can tell you that in the area where I used to live, you know, you couldn't even get your teeth cleaned for.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I didn't want to argue too much. You guys are good guests, but. Yeah, I mean, the dentists here still aren't open.
Are there places where, you know, where the hospitals and ERs were packed? Yeah, if you were full of COVID patients.
Let me ask you this. How's the dentist? I just was reading Lori Lightfoot's, if you go to the barber, they can't do anything to you that they can't do with a mask on you. In other words, you can't get a shave. You gotta wear a mask while you're getting your hair cut. So how the hell do you go to the dentist?
Well, you don't. I mean, this is, you know, the insanity of this, if you think about it, dentists have dealt with the potential for infectious transmission forever.
Yeah.
All right. Remember the craziness that was going on when AIDS first started? Because, you know, we all know how AIDS is transmitted, right? Well, guess what? An awful lot of people, when they go to the dentist, they bleed a little bit, or sometimes more than a little bit.
Yep.
And so, you know, this is infection control. And aerosolized stuff, you know, I mean, come on, you know, you have a tooth drilled or a root canal, there's stuff flying all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
But this is something they've dealt with forever. It is one of the most important areas of dental practice. The idea that these people can't manage to, you know, to stay open and safely clean your teeth is just nonsense. And yet, this is what they're doing. And then you have, you know, you have crazies like out in Pennsylvania where they tried to mandate negative pressure for dental procedures, which is nuts. You're never going to be able to afford to have a cavity filled anymore, and I don't understand you know, again, there's no science behind any of this.
No.
We continue to learn more and more. Now, back to what I said in February, my suspicion was that up to half the people in the country probably had some kind of pre-existing immunity to this thing based upon cross-immunity with other viruses. Now we're seeing that this is showing up in the studies.
Yep. I would agree with you. And, Carl, we haven't had you on in too long of a time, so we'll get you back pretty quick when we come back to these numbers, which might be as early as next week, if you're up for it. Take care of yourself in the meantime, and enjoy Tennessee, if that's such a thing. I guess
I love it here.
I'm almost wanting to come down and say to you, you got a house next door for sale, to be honest with you. SP Futures down 13. I'm not so sure I'm a long-term guy in Chicago. This is getting crazy up here. They just canceled all softball leagues this summer. That could be the final straw. You can't.
I can actually have a beer at the bar here. So there you go.
Get a load of this, Carl. They open the parks only till 5 o'clock. So after five, you're on. Do you believe that? All these leagues are canceled. SP Futures down 14. NASDAQ Futures down 5. Carl, thank you. Jack, thank you. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.